This is the Stargirl After Show with Sarah and Sean. Your post-show breakdown of DC Stargirl with Easter eggs, exclusive behind-the-scenes info, and cast and crew interviews.
This is our destiny.
I finally know who I really am.
I'm Stargirl.
This is the Stargirl After Show.
Hey, Star fam, welcome to another episode of Stargirl After Show, sponsored as always by Stargirl.tv and DCTV.news, your best resources for news, media, and spoilers about Stargirl and other DC Comics properties. I'm Sean.
And I'm Sarah.
And this week, I'm super excited to finally get to Infinity Incorporated Part 1.
We've been building up to this since the first episode of Season 2.
Yeah,
it's been a while.
The end of the first episode of Season 2. Yeah, that's when Jenny first showed up.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of good stuff and some surprises in store. So let's jump into it, shall we? Oh, wait. First, let me say another exciting thing. This episode, of course, written by James Robinson and directed by Glenn Winter, who directed the first episode of Stargirl. And the person that directs the first episode of a show sort of sets the whole look and feel of the show. So Glenn Winter is very responsible for Stargirl as we know it in a lot of ways. And so is James Robinson. So this is a power duo on this episode here.
All right. Well, we go back 6 months ago and we're in Milwaukee. This is a flashback scene because we already saw this last season when Jenny, it's her birthday, and so they kick her out of the house.
Happy birthday. Welcome to homelessness.
And so it's when she gets the little tin from her dad, and in it is the ring. At the same moment, over in Civic City, we meet her brother Todd and his boyfriend Danny. They broke into a fancy restaurant so Danny can make a fancy dinner for Todd's birthday.
There's already so much to talk about. First of all, this marks Todd and Danny, by extension, as being the first openly non-straight character on the show.
Mm-hmm.
Very, very happy to see it.
Yes.
They're obviously also living rough, as you would say, if they're breaking into a restaurant for dinner.
Yeah.
So they're sort of in the same situation as Jenny, but we're also getting the impression that, you know, Jenny's just being kicked out right this instant. Todd's already been living on the street, or however you're living that requires you to break into a restaurant for a nice dinner in the middle of the night.
Yeah.
And their relationship seems really sweet.
It does. I love the card that Danny gives him. He knows that it's important to Todd to go find his sister, so he gets a bus ticket so he can go do that. That was very sweet.
So these two are like very focused on each other, Jenny and Todd at this point. You know, they've been trying to find each other for ever at this point. But I have a little behind the scenes sort of Easter egg deal here.
Oh, all right.
The name of the restaurant is never explicitly stated. You just see an M on the windows in the back. The full name of the restaurant in the script is Erica M's. And that is a reference to Erica Manson, the character Marionette from Doomsday Clock, created by Geoff Johns.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
That's kind of fun.
That's literally something that no one else on any other podcast or article will ever know because they're only watching the show. They don't have the info that we have.
Exactly.
I'm just going to like be really insufferable about it right now.
And also where Jenny was, it was like the Ordway home.
Yes.
Or the Ordway Center, which is after Jerry Ordway.
Our very good friend, Jerry Ordway.
And we talked about it last season when we first saw the place, but it's even more exciting because in between seasons, we got to talk to him and could not find a friendlier, chattier comic book artist.
He was really great. Moving on, we get back to Jenny and the ring activating for her. But we also get to see what's happening in Civic City at that time, which is her activating the ring somehow triggers Todd's powers to kick in as well.
his eyes turn green as well, but then some shadow stuff starts shooting out of him.
As is appropriate for Obsidian.
Mm-hmm. And then the police arrive. Very sweet that Todd sends Danny away, although his go was very creepy when he said it.
It's the thing where, like, you have to get the dog to go away so it doesn't die, you know? That's what he was doing. Not that Danny is a dog, but I feel like he was as afraid of what was going on with him as he was of the police.
Mm-hmm.
And so he wanted to make sure that he didn't hurt Danny.
I think you're right.
I also like his little quip when the cops come in, where he's like, table for two?
Yep.
So even in the midst of all of that, like, he has some humor to him.
And that's good, because this is like our meeting him. So we want him to be a little bit personable. So that was good.
Yeah. And given that most of what we see him in this episode, he's like strapped to a gurney or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And like in pain, it's good to get that little bit of personality out of him.
Yeah.
You know, right up front, so that we can just begin caring about him in a way that isn't just through Jenny.
Yes. And the police, if they even are actually police, take Todd to the Helix Institute, and he's greeted by Nurse Love.
But it's worth pointing out, they weren't there because of the restaurant break-in.
Nope.
They were specifically looking for Todd.
Yeah, they say that's him.
And then they ask him, are you Todd Rice?
Mm-hmm. And Nurse Love seems to already know a lot about him. She knows that his father is Alan Scott, and she knows all sorts of info about him. And then Mr. Bones shows up, very excited to get Keith David back here.
You know, I do want to talk about Nurse Love for a moment.
Okay.
I don't know why I neglected to bring this up I'm going to throw you in here. We neglected to bring this up when she was in season two, is that the actress, Lynn Ash, is also in The Suicide Squad in one of the best roles, honestly. She played Polka Dot's mother that he was constantly hallucinating.
Oh, she did.
Yes. And
that's great.
She amazingly, if you remember, there's the scene where he sees all his teammates as his mother.
Mm-hmm.
And they had to make copies of everyone's super suits specifically for her.
Oh, really?
So they actually shot her in all of those costumes.
I assumed it was just CG.
No, I saw an interview with her some time ago where she said that they actually like made all those super suits for her. And that's, I love so funny. That.
Yeah. I would be like, can I just take these home?
And I love that she is in Stargirl. She's also in an episode of Doom Patrol. I'm also very glad that the most important thing she's done is follow us on Twitter.
That is exciting.
Okay, maybe not the most important, but like it's up there, right?
I think so.
Yeah. But yes, not only does she know that Todd's dad is Green Lantern, but also that his name was Alan Scott. Like, it seems like there are no secrets from Helix.
It seems like there's no secrets in general about superheroes and their private identities, at least in Blue Valley.
Well, this is Civic City.
That's true. Things are much different here.
But yeah.
And as Mr. Bone says, different can be good.
Keith David, man. What a rock star. I love that guy. That's all I have to say about that.
Yeah.
Though, actually, it is worth noting that Keith David and Joel McHale were on Community together.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, we're starting to collect our Community reunion show.
Mm-hmm.
Hashtag renew Stargirl so we can get a Community reunion show on Stargirl. It's a long hashtag, but just, you don't need anything else with it. That can be the whole tweet.
Aren't they doing a Community movie? Did they just announce that?
Yes, they are.
That would be the perfect time to start the crossover.
Yes, it would. Yes, it would. I want to see Jeff Winger fight Starman.
Yes. Okay, now we go over to one of my favorite scenes. Their family dinner, trying to be nonchalant, and Pat clearly doesn't understand what that means, because there he is going, Michael, would you care for some chicken?
Yes, father. A thigh would be sufficient, or something like that.
It is so funny.
And then he gives him a wing. What?
Yeah. It was the exact opposite of what we wanted. I thought that was funny.
I did notice that Joel was only in this episode in the earpieces. We never see him.
Yeah.
He's a really busy guy.
Yeah, that's fair.
They might have just written him an episode where he only had to come in and do some ADR so that he could go, I don't know, do some stand up or record one of his other 40 TV shows or be in six movies or like remind his wife what he looks like or something.
Well, I was also thinking, like, from the story point of view, it made it a much more Courtney centric episode that she was the star of the episode instead of sharing it with him.
I wish I had a little ba-dumped. But yeah, Starman has been taking center stage a lot. So it's very nice to push him to the background and let him just be absolutely hilarious, honestly, over the earpieces.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he really is. Just being like, Pat, what are you doing? And then, you know, Courtney and Barbara, they're naturals. They're doing great. And then Pat decides to start a prayer.
At some points, it's almost like Joel McHale is just playing MST3K with the episode.
Mm-hmm.
Like when we go over to the pit stop and they're playing Perfection. And he's like, really? This is a normal night for you guys?
I really hope it actually was a normal night for them. Although I feel like maybe it wasn't.
I feel like Rick playing Perfection is asking for trouble. Because he's got a bit of a short fuse. And that game is very irritating for those of us with no patience. I'm very impatient. And so like getting that in there and then having it, it's very frustrating. And I don't even have an hourglass aggroing me up.
Yeah. I don't think I usually play that one. I usually do different board games. So I don't have the same bad memories with that one. But if I had the chance to go to a game night at the pit stop with Zeke, Rick, and Jakeem, you know what? Give me a whole episode just of that. All the different games they play. Absolutely.
And Zeke spinning some yarns?
Oh, yeah. I could listen to him for days.
I mean, I honestly wish Zeke had a podcast. I would quit this podcast and just listen to his instead of making this one.
Or, you know, like invite him on this one. Third co-host.
But I mean, Zeke by himself in a room with a microphone talking to the internet is kind of my dream podcast.
That would be awesome.
Oh, yeah. There's only two things in this world you need to know. Yeah, please give it to me.
All right, but we shift from the game night over to Richie's where Yolanda is working. And Sylvester is like, oh, yeah, you are the best one yet at acting natural. You're doing great. And then Maria calls her over that Yolanda's mom is on the phone and it's urgent.
And so she's been caught lying. So this is the first time all month you've had a night shift. Where have you been?
Mm-hmm.
And like, what a terrible time to get that call from your mom. Like, you have a super secret mission that is about to kick into gear.
Yeah. But also, I mean, how is she getting away with that? Because she is helping give money to her family because her dad lost his job. So it just seems strange. Like they would be expecting more money unless that's where her tips aren't going to college funds. It's just her tips are going to her mom.
You know, she might be getting more tips on the nights that she does work and spreading it out.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe she only gets tipped out once a week. So like just whatever she gets. That it's like that at some restaurants, right?
Yeah.
I've never worked in the service industry.
I only did for 2 weeks.
Do you know why I've never worked in the service industry? Because I know I can't hack it. It's a hard, hard job. And I utterly and giantly respect anyone who does it.
Yeah, absolutely. I couldn't make it.
I definitely want to be on record letting everyone know that. People that look down on service industry people are the worst people.
Mm-hmm. I think it should be a requirement for everyone to either work, you know, at a restaurant or at a retail job. Just to figure out the other side, you know, who you're actually yelling at.
I did work at a customer service desk for many, many years.
Yeah.
So I'm familiar with the getting yelled at by people about things for which I have no control.
Yeah.
Like I'm familiar with that part of it. What I'm not familiar with is the like keeping track of everyone's orders and getting yelled at for like the food being wrong when like, you know, I only carry it to you. I don't cook it.
Right.
So, yeah, this has been Waiter Talk with Sarah and Sean.
But back to the episode. Sylvester is flying around and Beth is hacking and getting Operation Blackout Bomb ready.
Yeah, that's another nice comic reference because the original Dr. Midnight used blackout bombs.
I didn't get that.
A lot of you on Twitter and Reddit have asked, like, why doesn't she have blackout bombs? Well, she said the words, so that's good enough.
I'm still sticking with my Beth is going to go evil theory. And I think this is going to launch the idea to get her blackout bombs in the future.
All right.
So we go back over to the Whitmore Dugan house. Pat wrapping up the prayer saying with liberty and justice for all.
Okay, that was funny.
Which was hilarious.
You did the prayer thing?
And then Zeke is wrapping up a story with the lesson, don't spy on people.
Yeah, that seems ill-advised, Zeke. Come on.
He suggests that they start playing Clue, which I love because of the whole theme of this season.
Yes.
Knives Out, Clue, murder mystery. And then we get into the actual purpose of the plan.
So, yeah, she blacks out all of Blue Valley so that they can take out the cameras without being seen.
All right. So then they start Operation Find the Cameras going all around. And it worked because we see the person that's been watching them. All the monitors are cut out and he flips his puzzle, which took all episode last time for him to build that. Shouldn't have flipped it that quickly.
Yeah, that's another person who would be bad at playing perfection.
Mm-hmm.
I've just started to think of this person as Uatu the Watcher from Marvel Universe.
Oh, okay.
He's the central figure of the What If series.
Gotcha. And then we got our night going around together at the school, and they're kind of talking about Courtney, and Rick wonders if Courtney still even wants to be Stargirl.
Beth pushes back on that.
Yeah.
But the real concern here is Rick is constantly powered and he's getting really, really aggro.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, in a little bit, he enters a classroom by kicking the door off the hinges.
Yeah, it's a little unnecessary, causing a lot of damage there, Rick.
It's incredibly unnecessary. Also, that pillar that he punched just to show Beth.
Mm-hmm.
How do we know that wasn't load bearing?
He doesn't.
Why can this cafeteria not catch a break?
Yeah, but I mean, come on. Rick has to flex.
Flexing makes him feel good.
But Beth is looking a little bit scared at all this power going to Rick's head. And then we cut over to Pat and Courtney in the basement. They're getting cameras out there and Pat's like, how are you doing? And she's kind of dodging the question. And she's like, you know, we can't really worry about anything else when we're literally all being spied on. We have bigger issues right now.
Yeah, but he does coax out of her a little bit. She, you know, she's questioning her place in the JSA, not only as the leader, but like being there at all. Maybe her only purpose was to bring them together in the first place so that Sylvester could lead them, which obviously is a load of crap.
It is.
And then nothing else important happens in this scene. That's it.
It's slightly important here because one of my favorite characters, the Shade, shows back up.
Look, I got to say, as excited as I am that we got another episode with Jenny, because I do love her very much, the Shade coming back is the greatest thing that's happened this season.
Yeah, it really is. And he was just so funny this episode. All right, but he tells Courtney that he needs her help. And she's like, no, I got my own problems here. I can't help you. Plus, I don't even have the staff. He's like, I don't need the staff. I need you.
I need Courtney Whitmore.
And he pulls her away and Pat follows and all of them shade away.
Shade away. I like that. So then Yolanda is going and removing cameras from her house. And I love that they did make a note that Beth didn't find any cameras in her bedroom, which is a relief.
Makes the creep factor a little bit less.
And, you know, Beth scanned her room last episode.
Mm-hmm.
And there weren't any there. So I like that Uatu, the Watcher, is at least not a pervert.
It would be pretty problematic if some dude is just spying on a bunch of teenage girls.
Yeah, I mean, they have evil in mind, but not like evil.
Yeah.
And then her mom confronts her, obviously. And this is where Yolanda really shines, because this is the first time where Yolanda really stands up for herself against her mother.
Oh, I was so torn.
She's pleaded for respect in the past. She's asked for it. This is the first time where Yolanda demands respect from her mother.
Yes, But her line, "I'm old enough to make decisions about my own life," or "I'm old enough to lead my own life." No, she's not. She's only 16. She is not old enough to make all the decisions herself. Granted, her mom is not being a supportive parent.
I don't think she meant like, "I'm old enough to do whatever I want." I think she meant like, "I'm old enough to be out at 9 p.m. without like you knowing where I am every minute of the day."
Oh, I think she meant, "I'm allowed to do whatever I want and you don't have to know about it." And I understand where she's coming from. Her mom has driven her to that. But I'm also like, no, Yolanda, you need to have a curfew. You need to have a bedtime.
Well, I do not own a teenager. So that's how parents refer to their kids, right?
Yeah, I was going to say, we don't usually refer to it as owning.
I don't have kids. I just have a cat. And my cat doesn't want to go anywhere without me. So it's like, that's different.
Yeah.
So I'm more on Yolanda's side because her mom straight sucks. And Yolanda needs to stand up for herself and defy her. She's asking to see her phone where she can learn about all her superhero secrets.
Mm-hmm. So Yolanda's mom gives her threat, "Give me your phone or get out of this house." And we cut away before we see what Yolanda chooses to do.
Obviously, she gives her the phone because, you know, that's a tough ultimatum. Why would you even argue anymore?
Yeah. Mike is going down in the basement calling for dad in court. He's actually saying the words "dad," which I pointed out, or I caught that, because usually he just calls him Pat. So I was like, okay, this is showing that he's caring about him. So it makes it a little bit harder when he can't find him. Meanwhile, Shade, Courtney, and Pat arrive in a little industrial basement. And Shade says that he would send Pat back if he could, but his abilities are coming apart, which that's troubling.
That's very troubling.
And the only person who can fix his powers is immature. And he just goes on a whole list of a bunch of different descriptions. And he's like, "But you already know that." And it's Jenny.
I love the idea that Shade and Jade have been hanging out.
Yes. I love them just bickering throughout this whole thing.
I'm so upset that we apparently, while we've been focused on stuff in Blue Valley, we have missed this odd couple buddy road trip movie.
Yep.
That's been happening between these two. Why do they keep teasing us with these things that we want to see and will not see?
Yeah, I feel like they can't do a spinoff for all of them, but, you know, do a short little web series. You know, I'd be good with that.
The Shade and Jade road trip. Yes.
Yeah.
Give me 6 episodes of a web series about that. So it's revealed that they're in the Helix basement. They've gone there because Jenny's looking for Todd. And we learned that last season, when Jenny and Beth went looking for the Shade and they found that black goop on the ground, that black goop infected her ring, which we saw.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the result of that. They set this up last season in like episode 9. And so that's, if you recall, back in the first episode of this season, when the gambler first turned up, the Shade rubbed the corner of his eye and some smoke came away with some green sparks in it.
Mm-hmm.
That was all this. Jenny has somehow infected the darkness with her green ring. A whole peanut butter and the chocolate situation, as Pat put it.
Her, the shadows are corrupting the ring. He's like, no. Your light is creeping into my darkness.
And that darkness, the whole point of Courtney being here is to exorcise that darkness from Jenny so that the Shade can get his life back, go on being the creepy top hat dude that he is used to being.
Yeah, he's being very clear that he does not give any cares about Todd. All he cares about is getting his own life back.
How frustrating it must be for him when Courtney's like, well, I think saving Todd is what's going to help her clear that darkness out of her.
He must have been so pissed.
And I think Courtney believed that, but I also think she would have said it anyway,
mm-hmm.
because she knows Jenny needs to rescue Todd.
Yeah.
And if she solved that problem, they're in the basement of the building that Todd is in, Shade would just peace out.
Absolutely.
So even if she didn't genuinely think that was the right thing to do, it would be a good plan.
Yes. So then we cut upstairs and Todd is, you know, strapped to the table and the light is shining down on him and Nurse Love and Mr. Bones are talking. Mr. Bones says 6 months and he's only gotten worse. We need to get more aggressive with the treatment before we lose control.
He's only getting worse. Let's do more of what we've been doing while he's getting worse.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah. That's why he's called Mr. Bones, not Dr. Bones.
Mm-hmm.
Back in Blue Valley, Zeke is helping out Jakeem. They've made a wish for all the cameras that the person who killed the gambler has ever touched. And there's a lot of cameras here.
There are a ton of cameras there.
All sorts of cameras. There's a Betamax camera.
I saw one and I was like, I think that's like the video camera that my grandma used to use.
I do want to point out that this wish did not get any of the cameras that had actually been spying on them, it seems.
I mean, we've seen the wish go wrong many times whenever Thunderbolt grants one. But it also could mean that whoever killed the gambler was not the one spying on them.
But here's the great part. Zeke talking, obviously.
Yes.
And so he's pontificating about how, about the role of intention in magic and wishing, which she learned from his grandmother, an avid D&D player.
Yeah, Grandma Louise. Master sorceress wrapped in a belt of dwarven kind.
I love that. Because she had to have been an old woman when Dungeons and Dragons was released.
Mm-hmm.
Going by Zeke's age and rolling that back at least 40 years.
Yeah.
For a grandmother. That means that was one hip old lady.
Oh, yeah.
Again, I could just listen to Zeke tell stories about his youth forever.
Well, now I want to know, did he play D&D with her? What character was he? I think I need a Zeke RPG.
I don't think he did. Because when he said that thing about the dwarven kind, he said, whatever that means.
That's disappointing. So Zeke imparts Grandma Louise's wisdom here. She'd tell you that the wish needs to have drive, passion, and desire. You need to want something with every fiber of your being, all of your heart, so it has to come true.
I want you guys to know. Sarah, actually, tell me. How many pages of notes do you have for this episode?
5, but that's actually low.
She takes such studious notes. For every episode, my notes fit on one page. And I'm typically just writing down quick bullet points. Like our first Blue Valley scene, I just wrote BV now - staged dinner.
Well, I mean, you read the script and everything. You know the show much better than I do.
Also, I know that you're taking such extensive notes
that you don't have to.
And so you're going to bring up the stuff that I'm not like remembering from memory based on just remembering from memory. Oh, I'm a genius with that turn of phrase. But, you know, whatever my little bullet point doesn't bring to mind, I know you're going to fill in. I feel like we've got a good system worked out here.
I think so. Yeah. So back at the Whitmore Dugan house, Mike and Barbara are panicking because they can't find them. They're like, well, they couldn't have just vanished, except for that's exactly what happened.
Yeah, I don't think they know where they live. Like, it's Blue Valley. Of course they can have just vanished.
Yeah. And then, you know, someone's at the door. Yolanda is there and tearful and saying, I know Courtney and I aren't really talking right now, but I have nowhere else to go. And I was like, oh, of course Barbara's going to take you in.
Yeah. Here's the note I wrote for this scene. Barb is everyone's mom.
Yes.
I want to point out that I think just Barbara hugging Yolanda is longer than the time at the beginning where her and Mike are discussing whether or not the others could have just disappeared. They like really hold on this hug. It's a nice wide shot. Mm-hmm. Like you really feel it. It makes me love Barbara and in equal measure hate Maria Montez.
Yeah.
She might be the worst villain on the show.
Yeah, she's the Umbridge because she's the one that could actually happen.
Yeah. Also, can we bring up, Yolanda points it out, like, I know Courtney and I aren't really speaking right now. Mm-hmm. I also know there is not a guest room in that house.
Yeah.
God, the house is kind of big. It feels like you should have a guest room. But
yeah, it does.
But, you know, Mike doesn't even have a bedroom. I mean, he does. They just never built it. We've never seen it. Same with Pat and Barbara's room.
Huh. Never thought about that.
Yeah, the upstairs is just like a little seating room outside of Courtney's bedroom. And then Courtney's mm-hmm. bedroom. And then a hallway. That leads to nothing.
Oh, okay.
There are no other rooms on that stage. But, you know, we only need Courtney's room.
Yeah.
But the point I was making in a very rambly way is that, like, they are kind of on the outs. And now they're going to be living together? Question mark?
Yeah, but both of them kind of seem like they want to make up. Like, when Yolanda was in her room before her mom came in, Sylvester was talking to her like, hey, I know things are weird right now with you and Courtney, but you guys just need to talk. And she seemed genuinely grateful that he was saying that. And, like, it kind of calmed her a bit.
Yeah.
And then Pat and Courtney talking too. Yeah. She wants to make up.
It's important to remember that Courtney was literally the first person that was there for Yolanda after her fall from grace.
Yeah.
She was the first person that accepted her, talked to her like a person, didn't judge her, and put the onus of the whole thing onto Henry. And yet let Yolanda know she was the victim, not the villain.
Yeah.
All of that is so, so important to Yolanda being who she is now.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think she's going to forget any of that anytime soon.
No, I don't think so. Back over to our night at the school. Rick is just yelling and throwing stuff. And Beth is like, can you stop doing that?
Yeah, this is where he kicks in the door, like right off the hinges.
Yeah.
What are they going to think when they turn up on Monday?
I'm sure that's what was going through Beth's head. Like, yeah, this is scary that you're so angry and everything, but also you are damaging my school.
Yeah.
And she's, you know, just kind of wondering, what do they want? And he's like, it doesn't matter what they want. We'll crush them all the same.
And, you know, if he wasn't doing such grandstanding, then he would have probably gotten that camera before the lights came back on.
But they did come on. And he tough talks the camera and says, whoever you are, we're coming for you. And then punches it.
Such a tough guy.
And then over at the Helix Institute, they're all up there kind of exploring, and Shade senses where Todd is. Doesn't know how, but he can feel it.
Because they both got that, like, darkness power, maybe?
Do we know that Todd has that darkness power besides what we saw at the beginning of this episode?
I mean, we know what Obsidian's powers are. And I don't think they've ever been linked to a source in the comics with the Shade.
Okay.
But, you know, they seem pretty similar, especially given the end of this episode.
Well, the show strays enough from the comics that I wasn't sure if I was just remembering what was in the comics or if they were saying, if they said in the show. But Shade obviously is sensing him because of their connection to the shadows.
I like that Courtney also here to get through this doorway helps Jenny focus. And the Shade, you know, tries to give her some lip, and Pat's like, all right, let Courtney do the coaching.
Yeah.
But it's so good to see. You know, Courtney's really been off her game lately. She's been so distracted with Cameron that it's good to see her back in her element mm-hmm. and helping people and being the guiding force.
Yeah.
Which is a role that's been occupied by a pretty unhinged Sylvester lately.
I agree. I was really loving Courtney in this episode.
So they find Todd.
Yeah.
And it's so great seeing Todd and Jenny together, finally. Mm-hmm. Even though it's not like the reunion that you would expect.
It's very satisfying because we keep seeing the flashbacks to childhood with them being separated from each other and like reaching out for each other when they're being pulled away. And so to finally see them reunited, yeah, it was really good.
And, you know, she's been looking for Todd. We've been seeing her look for Todd, I should say, since episode 2 of last season.
Mm-hmm.
So it's another instance of like setup, wait, payoff. And finally, we're here. She's finally with Todd. What was your reaction when he's like, oh no, I'll destroy the world?
Oh, I was thinking there definitely has to be something going on that they're like manipulating his mind, that they're making him think that he's going to destroy the world.
Jenny grabs him and then he just like explodes with darkness. He goes full on obsidian shadow form.
Yeah, that was creepy.
Human shadow, glowing white eyes, looked amazing.
Has like all these tendrils there. Looked like a squid at one point.
Okay.
No.
I don't recall like ever thinking shape. Squid, but...
And then there were all the tendrils, or maybe an octopus too. You know, just something with all the legs.
Shadow Dr. Octopus.
Yeah.
He's a shadow Doc Ock.
And Pat jumps in front of Courtney when the shadows start coming towards her. I did have a slight panic. The Pat just died, but he did not die. Him and the Shade just ended up going over to the Shadowlands.
Really? You had a slight panic that Pat might have died?
It was more... I was mad. Because I was like, if this is the way they kill him off, I'll be so mad. But he didn't.
Yeah, they didn't even like tease it out. They let us know pretty quick.
Yeah, because they wake up on Main Street.
In the Shadowlands.
Yeah.
And then can we talk about that car that came at them? Mm-hmm. When you see two people laying in the road, do you just honk and never let up the gas?
I mean, that's what I do.
That's how they drive in St. Louis, everybody. I heard it personally. And that's the episode. Pat and the Shade are stuck in the Shadowlands forever. They're never getting out, and they're going to now have their own spin-off show in the Shadowlands called Shadow Buddies. Not my best pitch.
And then the theme song is going to be Ashley Simpson's Living in the Shadows. I'm all for it.
That may be the first time anyone on Earth has said Ashley Simpson's name in 10 years. If scheduling works out tomorrow night, here's an interview for you guys to listen to.
Gargoyle After Show. Gargoyle After Show.
Guys, we got Cameron Gelman here. Cameron, it's always such a joy to talk to you, and I'm really glad that you're joining us again this season.
Well, Sean, you know, I feel the same way, and I'm sorry I couldn't be there with you live in the studio. But this is pretty great.
I mean, you're in LA, I assume.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, you know, you just soak up that sun while we're here after dark.
Thank you kindly. Mm-hmm.
You know, yep. Enjoy.
You know what?
You're sitting poolside.
Yes, I am. Yes, sir.
Just living
the hard life, man.
Living that yep. Hollywood life.
Yep.
And you know, congrats, yep. You've earned it.
Thanks, Sean.
So let's just jump in and start talking Stargirl, shall we?
Sick.
I'm sure it'll devolve into just, you know, random chit chat. But for now, I'll try to stay on topic.
Okay. You do your very best and I'll do mine.
So coming into season 3, mm-hmm. Rick's been through a lot in the first two seasons.
What do you mean? Just kidding.
And now mainly we've had him just trying to fix his dad's hourglass or his. It's fair to call it his now.
Yeah.
And now he's got it fixed ish. And is enjoying the unlimited lifestyle. You know, it's sure. The hour man version of sitting poolside.
Exactly. You know, the unlimited lifestyle, Sean, that sounds like an ad for like Michelob Ultra, you know? that is definitely what's happening. I mean, not that Rick is doing well mentally, but yeah, it's probably a huge relief for him to at least have the powers thing sorted out for now. And, it's not fun for very long, as you and I both well know. There's a reason my dad put the limiter on the hourglass, and I'm not heeding that warning right now.
Also just wantonly damaging things, busting up the school in front of the school's number one fan.
Yep. But I think like that place is not a happy place for Rick. You know, I mean, he's had to go to that school for a long time. And for 90% of that tenure, he's been kicked around by people, and Henry was bullying him, and all the football kids and the teachers didn't trust him and didn't like him. And so I think for him, it's just a playground to be able to trash stuff.
There was a really great moment, though, where we get to see Rick showing his appreciation and sort of protectiveness for Miss Woods after mm-hmm. she stood up for him in season two. He maybe goes a little far in standing up for her with Cameron, but it was nice to see that he's...
matter of opinion, you know?
It's nice to see that he's developed that sort of feeling for an adult figure.
Yeah, he's a fiercely loyal guy. And he's also a teddy bear. All he wants is to be loved and to be valued. And I truly, if you look around like the world right now, if you look around in any environment, you will see adults who are actually dealing with like child wounds in grown-up bodies, just like trying to get by. No one knows how to heal that stuff. All of us desperately need to be parented. And even when we are, to a degree, there are things we don't get. And Rick got none of it. So to have a little bit of maternal energy from someone like Miss Woods, or a little paternal energy from someone like Pat, is huge. Super healing and necessary. And you're going to have that kid's heart, you know?
I mean, I'm not going to lie.
Also, I'd like to point out something, you know, Pat is the first three letters of paternal. And Miss Woods is the first three letters of maternal.
Okay, you had me on the first one. I'm going to check. I'm going to have to check your work on the second one.
Don't think about it too much. Just accept it.
All right. I'll accept it blindly just for you.
Thank you so much. 3 years of friendship.
I have to be honest. I kind of wish that we had a bit more of Rick / Our Man this season. It seems like he hasn't had the focus that he's had in previous seasons so far.
You know, it's a huge show and there's a lot of regulars. And ultimately, I think the most important thing with this season is that Hunter, who plays Cameron, got to kind of finally really step in. Amongst the JSA, like no one, well, actually that's not true. For the most part, our show is not one where we really track an individual for right. very long. And so like you had that, you know, season two was very much Meg's season in that way, right? Like we're following the main conflict comes from her. And the same thing is true this season with Hunter, even though there's all these other kind of distractions and like, will they or won't they issues with the other villains, like it's his season. So yes, I always want to act more and like, I love Rick and I'd love to have him on camera more, but ultimately to give it up for anybody, like I'm thrilled that it's on, you know?
Yeah. You guys are buds. Same hometown.
We are buds. That is my bud.
I have to say though, when someone's not getting a whole ton of screen time,
mm-hmm.
both the actor and the writing do a lot with a little.
Oh, absolutely. I think that's one of the strengths of our show is for the most part, people don't get forgotten about. There's always these little like establishing kind of shots or scenes of like, here's where so-and-so is right now, especially when it's like with me being one of the four members of the JSA, which is really what the show is about. Like there's no doubt they check back in, you know, and three seasons in, I think we can kind of assume what Rick's up to. I think you could totally make a season where literally you're just dealing with the four JSA members. And between the four of us, you'd have a full season's worth of really cool content. But the way that our show works, there's always exciting new folks in and we love that. Do you like how I said folks?
Oh yeah. I say folks all the time. I don't know if it's from watching too many politicians, because that seems to be the politician's favorite word.
I don't know. I just felt like a cool older man when I said it, you know, like in a rocking chair, guitar to the left, drinking some lemonade from the missus. That's how I felt.
And that's why you're outside. You got to keep the kids off your yard.
Exactly. You get it.
But let's talk about Rick's sort of power up, because it's not just that he's like got this power 24/7 now, but the way he threw that van and then like just came soaring through the air, having jumped God knows how far.
How far?
That was your stunt double, though, right? They didn't let you soar through the air.
Or did they? If I'm ever in motion like that, it's Benny. They rig Breck up all the time, but I don't know. They've never rigged me up. I'm not sure. And I'm not fighting that. You know what I mean? It's all right with me. So.
Oh yeah, that's more time to go hit Crafty.
Yes, it is. Or just, you know, get a coffee and cry a little bit about the fact that it's 3 a.m, you know?
Yeah, but where is the coffee, Rick?
Yeah, you say that, but it's not always, you know what I mean?
It's over at Crafty.
It is not always at Crafty. Sometimes it's a separate table.
You like how I called you Rick, as if like, I couldn't even tell the difference between you?
Mm-hmm. No, I get it. You know, I'm used to being treated like that, Sean. So, you know,
I only treat you with love and respect, Cam.
I hear you. So, you asked me about the whole power thing, right? Is that what your question was?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
I mean, yeah, it's crazy. Rick hates Cindy. Finally gets to throw a van at her. Super exciting.
Finally gets to throw a van at her.
You know?
As if that's the one thing he's been thinking about all these years. Like, I just wish I could throw a van at her.
Yeah, like, I was in a theater. I was in a conservatory one time and in New York. And this teacher came in and she was was talking about this friend of theirs that won a Tony. And the Tony was pretty much won off of one moment in the opening, like, preview or whatever, where this actor paused. Because they paused and everyone was like, wow, it sucked the air out of the room. And that was really what made the difference. And it turns out that the actor was like, yeah, I just forgot my line. Right. So every time you think Rick has more going on in his spirit or his heart, all he's really brooding about is throwing a van at Cindy.
Actor secrets, everybody.
Yep.
This is the heart of acting, is every actor needs to know their character's innermost secret.
Yeah, exactly. The thing that really eats at them.
I can't believe you never brought that up in previous interviews.
I was holding out on you, Sean. I don't know that I felt, you know, safe to share that yet. It's very intimate.
All right. I'm here for it.
Appreciate that.
But no, I mean, it's great. And I don't know. There's the moment where Cindy turns Rick and Yolanda against Breck, and this is just a thought coming out of nowhere, but I noticed that as Rick and Yolanda are like staring daggers at Courtney, they're the two that have the raccoon eyes. And so it makes for a really intense stare, because they're just these eyes coming from these pits of blackness.
Sure.
And then you like cut to the reverse of Courtney, who doesn't have that. It's just like her skin around her eyes. And I don't know, there's something about that that I can't quite vocalize that hit me in a pretty visceral way.
That's super cool. I always love to hear that kind of thing from people, because it's just, that's what art is, right? Like it's going to hit everybody different, and you never know which moments are going to land. And a lot of times it's accidental ones. Like, I don't think anybody thought about that. We're just always in raccoon eyes and she's not, but it's cool that there is contrast in that. And if you really wanted to read into it, you could totally say like that Yolanda and Rick, who have the raccoon eyes, kind of like,
they're the characters with darkness.
Yeah, exactly. That the worldview is a little more clouded in darkness. You could totally say that and it would make sense.
You could also say that their masks just look ridiculous without it.
You could also say that. You could also say that they just would look weird if they didn't have raccoon eyes. And you could also say that Yvette and Cam would be happier as human beings if they didn't have to wear the raccoon eyes. Because you could also say that everyone else leaves and, you know, we're still taking the raccoon eyes off.
Those Why though? You could just say. Go to Those Denny's.
You could say. I didn't say any of them, but you could say them.
I always thought it was funny seeing you guys just walk around with your giant raccoon eyes because they're so beyond.
Yeah, I think like, there's kind of a notion in the makeup trailer that, you know, just err on the side of more so that, you know, there's no chance of like a little bit of, you know, skin tone peeking through. And so then it ends up being the entire upper hemisphere of the face.
Well, Cam, have you ever seen Batman Returns?
No, I have not. Oh, I probably, is it a Christian Bale movie?
Nope. That's the second of the Michael Keaton movies with Michelle Pfeiffer.
I have not seen Keaton's run.
Oh. Dude, those are the movies that literally made me who I am today. So.
Okay. All right. Well, I got to go. Yeah.
But there's a moment, you know, that was probably the first superhero with the black makeup around the eyes. Michael Keaton's the original superhero panda.
Super panda. That's cool.
But in the, toward the end of his second movie, there's a scene where he takes his mask off. And even as a kid, it was very jarring that because he's removing his mask right before he pulls it off, there's no makeup around his eyes.
Right.
And it looks wrong. I don't know why we're talking so much about this, but
no, let's give you a little bit and, you know, that's okay. So, yeah. You know what? The whole thing's weird. All the little things that superheroes do, like put makeup on their faces before they go fight crime. It's all weird.
You know, at least with the new movie, the Matt Reeves, Robert Pattinson one, the makeup was there, like practically.
Yeah, totally. It was it's like that thing when you're watching like a stage production and someone drops a cup and no one deals with the fact that a cup was dropped and it makes you crazy. Cause you're like, it would have been so much better if you just acknowledged that that thing happened in real time. And they, that's basically what they did in the new Batman.
Yeah. So. And if someone just acknowledges that cup, maybe they win a Tony.
You never know. I mean, that's on the far right side of that spectrum is a Tony. And on the far left is just integrity as a baseline.
I have to say, I actually have a favorite moment thus far in this season of your performance. And it's it's a one syllable line. But it is from last week's episode where Rick first finds out from Cindy right after that fight that that Cameron has powers. And you just sort of go, and I don't want to try to replicate your acting, but I'm going to do my best to approximate. You just went, what? It was just like so understated, but you also really feel like there is so much rage and betrayal in him right now, but it comes out almost calm. And I loved it.
Thank you.
Can't say why. Much. It just that.
Yeah. Well, you did say why. Yeah. And you said it, you know, succinctly and everything. And it makes sense.
I mean, I don't know how much of that you were imparting or I'm just.
No, I mean, I think like the whole idea, especially when, you know, I've gotten very used to having one line in a scene and you have to understand as an actor that you as the actor not having lines does not equate to your character, this human being you're playing. It does not equate to them not being active in the scene. They're still there. And so then you have to go to like, well, what choice are they? Why are they making the choice not to speak? And Rick is generally speaking a man of very few words. He listens. He's got like a wolf thing going on, you know, like he's very vigilant and very protective. And, but when he does speak, yeah, he's already got enough on his plate, and to find something like that out, it's cool that, of course, I'm thrilled that it reads that way for you. And that's the goal. Like, not to, you're not trying to aim at anything, but you are dealing with what's going on. So it should probably come out like that, you know?
I just think that it's like the less obvious choice. And so it works a lot better because you don't want the obvious choice.
Right.
Because it's obvious.
Kudos then to, whoever directed that episode and to our editors as well, that they hopefully have options for me and pick the thing that is less predictable or whatever. Cause ultimately that's their call.
Yeah. That is something that people overlook a lot is, you know, you're not turning in the same performance with every take, right?
I mean,
you're always reacting ideally, in the moment.
Right. And so that should always change. It might not be much of a deviation, but, like if you ask me a question and then you ask me the same question, like I guarantee you my second answer and where I am and the time it's passed, it just changes. The moment changes. You might do a take where you're super, that take, you just happen to be super angry or pissed off, and then it kind of wipes you out. So the next take, you take a deep breath and you go, I'm really wiped out. And you go, all right, well then that's where Rick's starting from. And you start that scene wiped out and you see how he deals with where he is wiped out. You know, does he have to now muster up energy to stay involved in that JSA conversation at the table? Or is he allowed to be quieter? You know, so I'm going to do that. And unless Andy or somebody rushes in and says, hey, that just totally wasn't it. Like, then I just keep rolling your own way. You know, people are lots of things. So it's not, you can't be like, oh, well, that person wouldn't do that. We all do all the things, you know?
So all the cast together is basically just giving the director and editors a puzzle to put together into what makes the most cohesive scene for the story they're trying to tell.
Yeah, I think that's our job. Yeah. You know, everybody in the cast works differently. We all have different processes, but I think everybody is spontaneous. And obviously too, if you were doing the same thing over and over again, it would get boring. You'd be like, okay, I've done this, versus living in it and being like, all right, I'm going to deal with this as it is. That's exciting.
Yeah, absolutely.
One of them is just going around the race car track, and the other is each lap, the track shape changes.
I mean, there is an old adage that says the movie gets made in the editing room.
Yeah.
I think
the truth.
I think of all these interviews, you're the first one that's really given that shout out to the editors for helping bring this stuff together like that. So, you know, you're honestly the most introspective and thoughtful person I think I know.
Thanks, man.
You're always so intentional and just well thought. So un-Rick, really. I mean, not that he isn't thoughtful, but he doesn't seem to approach things with the intention and thoughtfulness that that you do. Otherwise,
I appreciate that.
You know, maybe his hourglass wouldn't be smashed.
Yeah, I mean, there's no doubt, like, if you literally had to categorize what makes he and I different, like, he is reactive and I am responsive. So that same spirit, because I play him, he's me, I'm him. But ultimately, he acts on what he feels, and I notice what I feel and step back from that. And then deal. And that's necessary if you don't want to be Rick. I mean, my life, I would not look so great if I was that way. You know, a set is a really curious place. There's a lot of personalities and there's a lot going on. And the same can be said of just being an adult and having a job. And if you acted off of every impulse to, you know, say what you felt to people, whether it was good or bad, like, you wouldn't have a job, you know?
I wouldn't have any friends.
Right.
I mean, yeah, you gotta keep some stuff back sometimes.
That's right. That's just part of the whole shtick. So, but he's 16? Like, at that age, it's a little more understandable. It's only amplified the way that it is because he has superpowers.
Yeah.
Which is the same thing. That's super akin to when someone like Justin Bieber, right, comes up in the spotlight. It's like, those are all normal mistakes, but, or Taylor Swift or whoever, but we crucify them basically for, like, you know, who they date and this and this and that. And it's only because we're watching them that way. There's extra responsibility there. And the same thing is true of being a teenager with superhero
yeah, that's
powers.
That's actually a really good point. Any celebrity teenager isn't really doing anything that any other teenager wouldn't do in their exact same position. They just, you know, those people don't have cameras on them.
Correct. And then a bunch of grown adults somehow think it's appropriate to chime in about, you know, all the ways that it is right or it's wrong or whatever. And it's like, that's a lot of pressure. And I think we should all focus on ourselves a little bit more.
Also, the worst thing that you can do is give a teenager resources, whether it's a whole boatload of money or superpowers. They're both pretty ill-advised.
Also, though, give a teenager none of those things. You know, if you grow up in a small town and you're it's, you know, country music and beer and hangouts at the barn, like, you don't need a lot to be bored and creative as a teenager. The whole point of that time is that you are starting to have sensations in your body and thoughts in your mind that aren't totally synonymous with your family. You start to diverge and have a sense of individualism, and it's super exciting and it's jarring and you want to express it. That's what that time is for.
Right. But if you have $60 million, no good is going to come of your freedom to express that in literally any way you want.
Not if you don't have guidance. Yeah. You know, there's no doubt, like, you still need help at that age. And a lot of the people that make it by that time don't have that help. And instead they have yes men around them, and that can get really tricky.
So Cam, what have you been up to since we wrapped?
You know, it's always a massive thing to film a season of TV. And I think the obvious thing for me to do after was rest and just kind of take care of myself. There's lots of things that were on that list of personal maintenance for me. And, I'm still checking those things off. So, I don't know what's going to happen with our fourth season, but ultimately, the fact that we're not already back there, like, I've had more time between these last two seasons than the one prior to that in terms of hiatus to just think about what I want now. I just turned 24. The last 10 years of my life have been really specific and really massive. And, I think sometimes, especially when you're young, it can feel like your life is leading you. And I've been really appreciative of the time to really slow down and heal what needs to be healed. And then also get to really consider what it is I want to build in the next 10, as opposed to just being led by it. I think it should be a combination of both, but, I've been working 10 years, you know, and, that's wild to me. But with that, I think I've earned some stripes, and I'm really thinking now about the stories that I want to tell and the kinds of work I do want to do and don't want to do and all of that. Just really enjoying my life right now and taking time to discover new things about myself and, you know, making time to surf, making time for acting class every week and, therapy and all that stuff, just maintenance and stuff to fill the tank.
I do want to say a happy belated birthday to you. Unfortunately, your birthday was on a day that I just didn't go on social media. And then the next day I saw the happy birthday Cameron Gelman posts on Twitter and stuff. And I was like, oh, man. But now it's
good.
It's too late to tell him happy birthday. So I'll do it now. Happy birthday.
Dude, thank you. Truly, there are few enough people I can count on one hand that I would actually think would know my birthday. You know what I mean? Know my birthday, like actually know it. That's not really how people like are. We all just kind of get it from social media. So no worries at all. And I appreciate you. And, you know, yeah. How about you? What have you been doing since we finished up?
Oh, you know, working like a whole lot. Took some time off, did some traveling, went to the UK.
Good, good. Yeah.
Shared a flight with Hunter.
Uh-huh.
Over to London.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
You know.
Very cool.
Fun stuff. And now I'm back at work and just really looking forward to being back in that position where you are, where I can just take some time and relax.
Yeah.
Because it's only been a few weeks, but already this show is killing me.
I would love to see, with as much money as in our industry, I would love to see there be a recognition of the fact that we could work smarter. I think that there's almost a pride that a lot of us have about just absolutely wearing ourselves away to the bone for this job. And it and no job is worth that. So I get that. And I've had a lot of conversations with a lot of my friends about this, and I don't understand it. You know, like the need to get things done at the rate that we do, because it's just TV, it's just movies. We're not saving lives. It's not heart surgery. And I think sometimes we push beyond what is safe. And most of my friends have gone through at least one severe burnout, and I don't know why that's necessary.
Yeah. You know, I've always found that you can tell you're working on a good show is if when someone is stressing out, someone else says, we're just making a TV show.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're not waging a war. We're not trying to save lives. We're just making a TV show. And if that comes from like your boss, then like, that's the greatest thing. That's the show you want to be on when your boss can acknowledge, like, this is just a TV show. It's not worth all the stress.
That's culture for you. You know, I worked on The Good Doctor briefly, and I think those were capped at like 11-hour days, maybe even 10, so that everyone every night could eat dinner with their families. That was just part of that showrunner's priority. That's a choice.
Yeah.
Maybe it costs a little more, maybe whatever, but still, it's like one of the most viewed shows in the world. No one cares. And so like, how sweet is that? You have this show that everybody loves and everybody watches. And in addition, the people who work on it are not unwell because of it.
Right. I mean, I'm in a great position. I've been able throughout my career, with the exception of like individual days here and there. But I've been able to maintain a good work-life balance. Otherwise, you know, if I were on set, like most of the people that I work with working their hours, there's no way I'd have time to do this podcast.
Right.
It just wouldn't happen.
Right.
But I'm in a good lucky position working in the art department where I don't have all that. And it's great.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm happy that that's where you are, man.
And I appreciate it all the time. I am appreciative of it. And I'm appreciative of the people that work so hard for the super long hours that I don't have to, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Always be thankful for the people that are in a worse off position than you, except let's face it.
Oh my God.
Those people are making a lot more money than me because they get all that overtime.
Sure. But sure. It's everybody's priorities are different. And should you even be in a position to consider your priorities and make choices around that, that is to say that you are very blessed.
Yeah. And I think we all are. All of us who can take time off of work. Oh my God. That's a thing that we in America just don't have enough of.
There's no doubt.
I was off of work for 2 months and comfortable. And how many people can say that, honestly? That's just great. And
there's and this is the beginning of a huge conversation that we won't have time for today because it's just so massive about, you know, what capitalism is and what Western medicine is and how these things play into the choices that we have to make about work to provide for our families, and then what kinds of choices we have to make about our health to keep moving at that pace. And, you know, like the work that I've been able to do on myself these last couple months has been a full-time job. I could not do that if I was also working. And the fact that anybody should ever have to choose between the two is problematic. Because if we can't choose ourselves and we have to choose the work, then it makes sense that we band-aid things and do not actually heal them. And that is where, right, you take something to make the pain go away as opposed to understanding where the pain's coming from in your body or mentally or whatever. And that eventually catches up with you. And then you get a when the body says no situation, you know, which somebody like Gabor Mate wrote a book about. Like, that's when you get the body shutting down on you because it cannot do it anymore. It's sad to see that happen to people at 40 years old. And that's very common in this country. You know, we're supposed to be pretty damn vibrant until we're 100 years old and then peacefully go. And you look at the blue zones, that's what's happening. So.
Yeah. I mean, I spent most of my 20s working 80 or more hours a week and, mm-hmm. you know, just to get by and try to like build something other than just getting by.
Yep.
And, still got me nowhere until I, you know, none of that built me entering the film industry and changing my life. That just stuff I did on the side in my free time.
Uh-huh.
And that's, we need to utilize our free time. It's so important.
100%.
I'm utilizing my free time to talk to you right now. And that's super rewarding for me.
I'm honored, man. I really am. I appreciate your time and the fact that you've always wanted to do this podcast and support the show. And I know we've talked so much about the show in this last little bit of this hour here that we've had together, but it makes me so happy to just get to catch up with you because you're such a good dude and a huge part of our show. So,
well, you know, I love all you guys. The more time I can spend with you, the better, honestly. And you know, I don't even often feel that weird that like I'm 20 years older than all you guys, but well, you know, whatever.
Oh dude, what does that matter? You know, I think the older all of us get, the less the years matter, right? Like it just doesn't, I don't know. You relate to who you relate to and, you connect with who you connect with and those are the people you keep around. So that's it.
Well, Cam, I feel like I've taken enough of your evening. Your dog clearly wants your attention.
There is, yeah, the dog is over here waiting on me.
Very cute, by the way.
Dude, this is a freaking angel puppy. But before we go, I mean, is there anything else you wanted to ask me about the show? I know that is technically the purpose of this get together.
Look, I'll be honest. I've just been using these interviews as an excuse to chat. Out,
yeah.
Yeah. I mean, if you went back and listened to the interview with Meg, it's just like an hour of chit chat because who wouldn't want to just chat with Meg for an hour about whatever because she's a joy.
Yeah, I get it. I get it.
And it's, you know, sort of the same thing with you. Like,
sort of, he says,
you know, I scheduled this interview because, you know, Rick's gotten to a point in the show that needs to be discussed.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But also like we talked on the phone the other day for a bit and I was like, I need more of this chatting needs to happen more.
It's one of the weirdest things about our industry is like, You don't just meet people, you crash into people. And you don't just like exit, you like peace the F out. You know, like when you go on location, especially like, you know, you live in Atlanta and obviously we've been there for 3 years and we come storming in and then we kind of storm out too. And it's so weird because you're so used to seeing people all the time and getting to connect and suddenly you're in a different world than them, different stratosphere. And like, what just happened? I mean, it's hard then when life gets busy to make time for this kind of stuff. So, I love that you just wanted to catch up and it's certainly good with me, man. I've spent my whole day talking about the show. So
yeah, it's like every show, you know, you're used to like The Office, you know, it's mm-hmm. a group of people mm-hmm. that work together and see each other every day for years and
yep.
years.
Yep.
But film isn't like that. It's a group of people who come together for anywhere from 1 month to 10 months.
Yeah, maybe even 14 or 16, but yeah.
And then never see each other again, maybe. Because
yeah.
the next thing you're on, you're with a whole different group. And sometimes you'll have some of the same people and you're excited to see each other again. And
yeah.
And then throughout all of that, there are certain people that either you work with more often or that you just really, yep. really clicked with. Yep. And you make an extra effort to keep in contact with those people.
100%.
I'll be honest, at 43 years old, there are very, very few people that I bother trying to keep in contact with anymore because yeah. your best and oldest friends, you can go 20 years without seeing them and it's still like it was yesterday.
For sure. I totally get that. And yeah, ultimately, everybody's got to tend to their own garden. And within that, there's always responsibilities. Just when someone looks at their work, their health, and their family, that's for most people a full plate or an overflowing plate. So you're totally right. That's it. You just keep in touch with the people that you care about, and you don't have to do much more than reach out to them when you think of them. And if that's often, then they'll hear from you a lot. So yeah. But I appreciate that you continue to kind of foster this sort of community thing under the guise of the podcast. And, you know, it's very sweet.
Well, if the podcast ended tomorrow, you would still get phone calls from me. No worries.
I trust that. I trust that. I need that hourglass from you, buddy.
Working on it. It's on my ever-growing list. You should see my office right now. It's a mess because I decided to organize everything, not just have it put away, but like
house apart too.
There's things on every surface, and once I'm done with that, I can move on to the next thing. And the hourglass has been on my mind.
I only bring it up because I just spoke at a gala for a really cool type 1 diabetes foundation called Camp Chinook. And the whole theme of the night was superheroes. And I had played a whole video of me fighting and then to kind of talk to all these kids about, you know, the parallels between being a type 1 and being a superhero and what that can feel like from a burden standpoint, a responsibility standpoint. And I thought to grab the thing and I was like, oh, I don't have it. But that's the only reason that I'm even thinking about it. And there's no rush, man, but I love the thing and, it's a work of art and I'd love to have it in my room as a reminder of, our whole crazy adventure.
And I will get it back to you. I promise.
Sweet man.
And, you know, hopefully strengthen up that chain so that it doesn't fall off your neck and break again.
Yeah. 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 Exactly. You know what? It's a heavy piece of machinery. It's a real friggin' thing.
Solid brass. It really shows you why the one on the show is not real solid brass.
100%. It does clarify that. I mean, it's so beautiful that like we could have used that on the show if we were doing really still stuff.
Like a good close up. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. But beyond that, I mean, you know, they're breakable enough as they are without being that. So
also let's point out that like, there are magnets in it and it has to magnet to your chest to stay in place while you fight. It's a little behind info for people.
Yeah. Not that that works, but yes, that is our system. My upper lip has taken more hits from the thing than, you could possibly imagine.
And aren't you glad you aren't wearing this one?
Yeah. Yeah. No, that would be teeth missing. That would be a hockey puck.
Yeah.
I'd have, it'd be, you know, real cute, but I'd have none of these front guys here.
You kind of need those for your whole career thing.
Yeah. It's just nice to be able to chew as well.
Yeah. Yeah.
No, those are the whistling, Apple teeth, you know, I can't whistle, but, upper walls of the front teeth there, you use that to blow bubble gum. I do that on occasion. And otherwise, you know, I just am happy to have them. I, you know, it feels nice that they're all there.
Well, all right, bud. I'm going to let you go. We will talk soon, I'm sure. I'm hoping that we'll see you in town for season 4, knock wood.
Yeah, yeah.
And I want you to enjoy the rest of your evening. Or as Pat would say, have a super great day.
Have a great night, man. Thanks for your time. And, you know, thanks for doing this. I appreciate you.
Tell the dog I said hi.
Bye, buddy. Cargirl
After Show. And we're back just in time to say goodbye.
But before we say bye.
Yes. Tell people where they can hear you talk more.
You should go over to fandomlim.com and check out all sorts of great podcasts, but especially check out What's New Nancy Drew and the Swift Review, where I cover Tom Swift and Nancy Drew on the CW. Go watch the show and hashtag save Tom Swift.
And I am starting a brand new podcast. It's called Zeke and Me, and it's me. No, I wish.
I would be so pissed. It would have to be Zeke and me and Sarah.
Go to fandomlim.com and listen to whatever podcast you want over there. Any ears on any podcast over there will make me happy. But also feel free to drop us a review for Stargirl After Show. Follow us on Twitter. You can follow us on Instagram as well, but I am not as active over there. But Twitter is the place for me for now. And that's it. We will be back for the thrilling conclusion of the Infinity Inc. saga with Infinity Inc. Part 2 next week. Also with a very special guest at that point. Until then, have a super great day.
Stargirl After Show is a production of Fandom Limb Media.